Yeah, so do you think there were any main leaders of the movement? Yeah, just hold it like that.
I mean, the JNU Students Union was leading it. Okay. So I think there has been over a period of time a realization that, I mean, of course, organizational leaders are there, I mean, or, you know, but I think in this movement particularly, there was, I think, a political consensus among all political organizations, at least on the progressive democratic left side, that the union should lead this. There shouldn't be a parallel kind of a structure or a kind of a leadership that was undermining the JNUSU or, you know, undermining the collective struggle, frankly. So that way there was a consensus that whatever be our criticism, whatever be our collective assessments of the way in which the movement was running, the union should be held accountable and they should therefore also take the responsibility to lead the. So I think the four office bearers were.
What was the motor protest? Like what happened after you guys heard about
this? So I think why this movement, I think, has been an important, something that I wanted to talk about, apart from the other movements that have happened on campus, is for the first time I think you have, after from whatever little I know of JNU's history of student movement, is that after I think a long time you actually have this kind of a mass participation at a everyday level. Earlier it was usually, you know, some kind of a event that has happened, let's say the arrest of the JNU's president or a student getting mob lynched, and so those were one of incidents which kind of sparked off a, you know, a movement or a mobilization. The task here was not that there was one event as such. So the task was that every day you have to go into class, every day you have to, you know, make a decision if you're a research scholar that you are going to oppose. So that way the task was far more difficult, because here you were actually expecting 8,000 students to listen to you at a everyday level. It wasn't one day of mobilization where 8,000 students come, agree with you and then go back.
Yeah.
So that was something very novel, and that couldn't have happened without reclaiming the structure of the SFCs, I think. So that was something, another thing that was novel in this movement, that till now, at least between 2013 to 2018, 17, the SFCs were basically, you know, academic bodies where, you know, minor interests of students, you know, center level issues were dealt with. Sometimes SFCs weren't even functioning in a lot of centers. But for the first time you had, I think, in JNU's political mobilization, the SFCs became like the main, if you actually talk of leaders, I would say the SFCs became, rather than like individual students, I think the SFCs as a body became like the leadership of the movement.
Just explain SFCs.
So SFCs are student faculty committees.
Yeah.
So the system of SFCs goes back to the 70s.
Yeah.
So that was a time when, so owing to JNU's commitment to a certain new way of, a more democratized way of academics, so these bodies are basically bodies where students were elected by their own centers, and they would be part of a committee where faculty members were also members, and they would decide on not just matters pertaining to class timings and exam schedules and so on, but even curriculum, giving feedback to the professors, looking at problems that students faced. So that was a system that was quite successful, we hear, in the early 70s and up to the 80s. But after that, I mean, I hear that from the 90s onwards, the SFCs, while formally still being in place, were bodies which basically just looked at exam schedules. If students had some outstanding issue, they would go and talk to the faculty members through this body. But that got rejuvenated in this movement. I mean, not merely as to say that they became political, as if they were not political before, but they helped in a certain way in which the administration was, you know, has launched this all-out attack. The SFCs became a far more entrenched body that allowed, you know, a resistance to be far more concrete top to bottom, rather than just at the level of, let's say, the union versus the admin.
Right. Who were the people participating in the movement? Were they primarily students?
Yeah. The boycott attendance, also another thing. So JNU over the last 2 years has seen a lot of teacher-student mobilizations together. But on this issue, actually, there was I mean, of course, the JNU Teachers Association was wholeheartedly with the movement.
Yeah.
But the teaching community as such was not united, or, you know, there was not one position that they opposed attendance. Hmm. So it was also a challenge for the student movement to also reassess its own strength on its own.
Yeah.
You know, rather than depending on the teaching community or the faculty. So that was another thing that happened in this movement.
Tell me about some memorable experiences or events that have stayed with you.
In terms of events, I think...
As I understand it, there was a big march that was also
yeah,
part of
yeah,
this.
Yeah, long march also became... Yeah. So but by then, it also changed into a lot of other things.
Yes.
Yeah, so that I'll talk, yeah, I think, later. But particularly with the boycott attendance, I think, because I said it wasn't a one-off incident, the fact that I was extremely, you know, like, very inspired by the fact that after 4 months, when students were giving their exams, until then there was, you know, this boycott of attendance. That is probably the biggest takeaway from this movement, that, you know, that if you really build up that kind of a genuine democratic consensus, if you convince students of your position, if students are convinced that, you know, this is something that is wrong, I mean, I think people can come together and oppose and resist the admin's move. That was one takeaway. But in terms of particular instances, I remember there was one instance where students of CSRT, Geography, their faculty came and said that, you know, I'm going to take your attendance. This was MA batch.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful to see that, you know, these are students, they're not political activists or anything, but they actually said that we will not sign, and all of them walked out of the class. That was one, you know, it was quite inspiring. There was another time when for an entire day we were waiting for the vice chancellor at AdBlock. So before that also AdBlock, I was just saying that there was a 100 meter ban. There is still a high court ban, which makes it very difficult for anyone, because if you actually break that 100 meter radius, you are actually in contempt of court. So I think over a period of time, frankly, we were all waiting for the moment when there would be enough support amongst the students for us to break that radius, rather than just going as 50, 60, 70 activists just going and breaking it and then facing contempt. We would have rather faced a contempt when knowing that there were, let's say, 2,000, 3,000 students with us who don't think that breaking that, you know, 100 meter is wrong, you know. So that moment was also good when we had this human chain. Of course, there was some jhagda that happened, but the fact that we ultimately, you know, there was this momentum that pushed everyone. I mean, I don't think anyone was prepared to break it, or, you know, or I don't think anyone even thought of the consequences. I mean, right now the JNU Students Union office bearers are facing a contempt proceeding in High Court, for which they'll probably be punished. But at that point of time, that the momentum was such that I think we all went and broke that 100 meter and it was reclaimed. So that also was one something that, you know, after a long time, because I think between 9th February, the way the movement happened, there was a certain, you know, dynamic to it. It became a huge issue, to the disappointment of, I think, Najib, where I think ultimately the fact of the matter is, whatever be our differences, the fact of the matter is a fellow student has still not returned. So I'm not saying a movement success or failure depends on something like that, but the fact of the matter is that a student who was of our age, who was a student here, has not returned to his family, has not returned to finish his studies, which is, so I think that kind of disappointment was there within the student community as well. Also seat cut after that. So I think this semester and that particular movement kind of broke, or at least partially drew out a lot of the skepticism, you know, the kind of disillusionment that had set in amongst the students. Signs of which were these things, you know, breaking the 100 meter was one sign.
Yeah.
But carrying on, continuing with boycott for 4 months was another. Also the fact that, you know, GBMs was another thing. I've never seen, also having classes outside the classrooms. But I think it was a wonderful, you know, it really was a wonderful display of how one should resist. I mean, it was a very, I mean, there were moments of militancy, there were moments when, you know, when we had to take a step back, there were moments when there were heated debates, you know, very, sometimes, you know, we weren't in talking terms, you know, so those dynamics were all there, but that momentum, that collective kind of a resistance was something that I have not seen in a long time. Like, I don't think I've ever seen it actually in JNU. Considering how sectarian we all are, that I think was something that was.
Talk to me about the trajectory of the movement. Like, what happened then after the initial protests?
So, initially there was the signature campaign
yeah.
that went on till the 4th of January. Then there was a protest at Adblock
yeah.
where these signatures were submitted. After that, there was a call for a university strike on the 15th of January. Or I think on the 16th of January. So that strike actually gave us the confidence that students are also equally agitated and
yeah.
there is a simmering discontent with this policy. Because the strike was hugely successful. It wasn't one of those, you know, normal strikes that JNU keeps having. When people were participating in the strike, they came and started protesting. Science schools, particularly this SES, was shut. So that was encouraging to see that happen. After that, there was a continuous campaign for boycott, boycotting the attendance system. So that went on. Then there was news that an academic council was to take place on the 23rd of February. So our plan and our organization's understanding was that it is the academic council which can repeal this kind of a, you know, an illegal decision. It has to be confirmed in the academic council. The academic council has to be the forum in which it has to be finally resisted. But the vice chancellor cancelled the academic council at the last hour.
Yeah.
Which led to a lot of, also there was this circular that came on the 7th or 8th of February, which suggested that if you don't have so and so attendance, the minimum prescribed percentage, then you will not be allowed to take your registration next semester, your scholarship will be stopped, you will not be allowed to give examinations. So it was a very threatening circular, and I think that took the movement to another level. So it was always the administration's, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, so then there was it turned into a gherav. We never called it a gherav for tactical purposes. But there was a gherav of the registrar. The vice chancellor was supposed to be inside, but he was not there finally, or he had escaped by some means. I mean, there was a chance, frankly, of a lot of violence that night, because the RSS faculty had come to instigate violence. They were holding a press conference right next to where the agitation was going on. The rector had made up excuses that his health was not well, even though doctors were called by the students themselves. The ambulance was called by the students themselves. So the administration tried to ensure that there is an agitation which takes a violent turn, and there was a genuine news that, you know, Sinodi, like, you know, a lot of other universities we've seen, like Ravenshaw University, this university in Tamil Nadu. So Sinodi was one of the options. Sinodi or some kind of a closure was on the cards of the admin. But ultimately, I mean, I think there was a collective, again, there, that collective kind of sense was there. So even though that gherav was withdrawn, I mean, students were ready to again go back in a few days' time. They were ready to kind of go back to the class at least. So the boycott was something that my assessment was that it was always, it was like this, it had its ups when people were boycotting en masse, all students were boycotting. Then there were some disruptions, some kind of threat, some kind of circular that was leading to a disruption of the boycott. But then these moments and these kinds of agitations again brought up the level of, you know, students boycotting the attendance system. So that went on till Feb. March onwards, I mean, there was a lot of discussion whether we should go to court, you know, what are the other legal strategies that can be made possible. But I think right from the start, at least on this issue, it was clear that legal strategies would not help. So that
why
also
do you think so?
I mean, because of the nature of attendance. I mean, a lot of articles were written. I think intellectually, I think we have made a very good case as to why an attendance system is not required. But frankly, the nature of attendance is such that, and the way in which JNU has been vilified in the public, the narrative was quite easy to sell outside, that, you know, these are a bunch of students who just come here, they keep protesting, they give naras, and on top of that, they don't attend classes and they don't want to attend classes. So that was very difficult, and I think that has a bearing on the way in which judgments and the High Court also functions. At least from our experiences in past legal, you know, that it's a very, I mean, it might seem like an autonomous, you know, space of law, legality, procedure, but it's a deeply political space, and it's motivated by the political situation around.
Coming to specifics about how the movement functioned, tell me about how students were mobilized for different protests that were happening day to day.
One was the conventional methods were used. That is, you have, I think we've had around 40-50 mess campaigns. Like every day there was a mess campaign.
Right.
At one point of time, of course.
What, like explain mess campaign.
So mess campaigns are basically, so there are 17 messes in the university which serve lunch, dinner. Students come between 7:30 to 9 at night. And that is a time for us to campaign. So the campaign goes from Chandrabhaga Hostel, which is on the western side of the university campus, at one end of the campus, where students, so the campaign starts there. You go inside the mess, there is a speech that is delivered. Usually the developments of what has been happening on the campus is expressed and is being conveyed to the students. And the same thing goes on in the different messes. So that is one means of reaching out to the students.
So who does this? Like, these are student activists?
Yeah. So generally the JNUSU leadership is addressing the students.
Okay.
Sometimes there are all orgs also which come and, you know.
Okay.
So that was one of...
So that was mess campaign?
Mess campaign was one of the conventional methods. The other in this movement was WhatsApp. I think again, JNU's politics is drastically changing with the way WhatsApp and social media is dominating the way in which we also mobilize. So a lot of things were just based on WhatsApp messages. So there were memes that were being made, there was, you know, people made videos, songs, you know, these kinds of things were actually helping in mobilizing. I mean, you would think that these are just aesthetics of something, you know, it just makes something look in a certain way, but it was actually concretely helping in mobilization. So WhatsApp messages was one. Another thing was, you started having new groups that were being formed. So in the meantime, there was a lot of agitation. So after a long time, there was this sense of rebellion across the campus. So I remember there was one time when in the School of Languages, students of the Spanish Center were fighting with their faculty members. In SIS, there was a fight that broke out between, you know, some right-wing people, students, and in SSS, there were heated arguments going on. So there was such a level of agitation amongst the students that... So in the middle, there were these hostel raids that started. So hostel checks. Wardens would come up to hostels and check and, you know, fine students for having this or that and so on and so forth. At that point of time, what emerged was new WhatsApp groups started being formed. So let's say in one hostel, people living on the same floor created a WhatsApp group.
Okay.
People of the same hostel, let's say in Satluj, they created a group called Satluj Family. So these kinds of things happened, which allowed mobilization to take place at a... So basically, information was flowing much in a really fast way.
Right. Was there a designated campaign team that was sending out information, or do you think organizations and JNUSU was doing it on their own?
I can speak for JNUSU, that there is a coordination committee
of
the three organizations.
Huh.
CC was, at least from the JNUSU's formal side, the CC was acting again. A lot of it was happening through WhatsApp. It didn't require us to actually
have meetings.
Because that would take a lot of time.
Yeah.
So a lot of quick decisions, let's say, should we go to Adblock?
You know?
It didn't require us to actually have a meeting. It did require a meeting, but that meeting was not a formal, you know, where three people or three organizations come together or so on and so forth. A lot of things happened over WhatsApp or, you know, over the phone. And it was a very fluid situation.
Did the mainstream media cover the movement at all?
See, initially tactically, I think we all took a decision that it's better that the media stays off.
Okay.
Initially.
Yeah.
Because anyways, JNU gets a lot of attention.
Hmm.
And we were quite certain that this, the narrative that I just said of you, these vagabond students just shouting and not attending classes, that would have really not helped our cause. So what was done was, and I think some people did it on their own, some people did it in a more coordinated manner. So a lot of articles were written, so on Wire, on different kinds of medium, on Indian Express a lot of articles were being written by the faculty members. Students also, wrote articles. I remember Chepal had written an article. Different people in their own capacity were writing and making a more sensible and nuanced argument as to why. I think the media started coming after the Ghirao happened, when there was a huge mobilization of students. So, I mean, I remember that day around 1500, 2000 students had landed up at Antwerp. So then we thought that once you had a mobilization of students, that's when the media was also involved in the movement.
What kind of coverage was it? Was it positive?
Look, the usual suspects like Zee News, Times Now, Republic, they were obviously running an
like
anti...
I remember there was a JNU's demanding right to bunk.
Things. India Today also, I think. Not Aaj Tak or something also. Okay. So, I think JNU has a very polarized media reception anyways.
Right.
So, those media who are sensible, who are liberal, who are, who are aware of the way in which a university is being destroyed or being sought to be destroyed, they were sympathetic to the, to the movement.
Were there press statements brought out by the union? There were. So, how does that function? You said that the three parties that are part of the union right now.
So, the CC has a division.
Yeah, okay. So, just talk about that.
So, the division is not a it's not a rigid division.
Hmm.
So, movement to movement, depending on whoever is available. So, let's say a press statement needs to be drafted. Sometimes, someone from DS, either I write it, or someone from ISA writes it, or someone from SFI writes it. During that point of time, it was usually shared between DSF and ISA in terms of the press statement. In terms of postering also, similarly, that division was there. You know, who will put up the posters. But all of it was passed through the union. So once, let's say a press statement is, the draft is ready, it has to be, it has to be passed through the four office bearers.
The elected.
Because it comes under their name. So,
right.
I mean, because they can't sit and write the, these things. So it's like we are the support system to the four office bearers.
Talk to me a little about repercussions. What happened afterwards? Did the university agree to any of the demands?
So, as of now, the university officially has not agreed to the demands. But it seems, at least for this semester, we don't know what's going to happen in the next semester. But for this semester, the university doesn't seem to have the power to actually do anything, because so many students have boycotted the attendance system that they couldn't stop students. So in the middle, the union had to intervene to ensure that scholarships are given. So there also the admin had to take a step back, because technically, legally, they can't stop scholarships. So that was not stopped. Then there was this chairperson removal that happened.
Yeah, what happened?
The admin said that those chairpersons who had written to the admin suggesting that this policy was not something they were willing to implement, they were removed overnight. So right in the middle of the night, sometime in March, 7 to 8 chairpersons and deans of various centers were removed, and they were replaced by pro-admin faculty members, some of whom had no relation to the subject or the center to which they were assigned the chairpersonship or deanship. So that was challenged in court, because that was there was a procedural lapse that the admin could not do something like that. So there has been a stay on that as well from the High Court, and the deans and chairpersons have been asked to be reinstated. So that was also a shot in the arm for us, because that also meant that the logic of opposing the attendance system as being illegal and not having been passed through the academic council hold some legal weight. So that's why the admin has not been able to implement it this semester. There are talks that they might introduce some kind of affidavit, some kind of other measures to ensure that there is attendance next semester. But I think the spirit of this semester would continue.
Other than this particular case that you talked about the chairpersons, have there been were other cases filed in the court?
Regarding attendance?
Regarding
or?
This movement.
No. So that was also a legal strategy that we had taken.
Yeah. Okay.
Because, like I said, so just saying that we don't want attendance,
yeah,
or just saying that, you know, it's procedurally wrong and the admin should be taken to task, therefore, we thought that legally it wouldn't stand a lot of ground. I mean,
was there any encounters with the police?
Yeah. So, FIRs have been. So I think there are at present, during this period of agitation, I think around 6 or 7 FIRs have been filed against students.
Okay. Which students are these?
Including me.
Okay.
So generally the known faces.
Okay.
Office bearers, of course. So for all kinds of reasons, for confining higher officials, to threat to whatever, threat to life, attempt to murder, rioting,
okay,
all kind of frivolous.
Do you think this movement found resonance in other campuses?
I think, see, the fact is that attendance systems are there in many of the Indian universities.
Yeah.
Maybe not in universities abroad, but it is there in a lot of universities in India. But I think across universities, these systems are very repressive in nature. And students, I am sure, felt that, you know, what was happening in JNU might have been another case of JNU being an exceptional, you know, this island where, you know, these people have such utopian kind of issues to agitate on. But I am sure a lot of students, and some students did tell us, communicate to us, that this was something that really had an impact on the way in which they were also looking at the attendance system in their universities.
Right.
You know, the way in which it reduces mobility of students, the way in which it leads to a very repressive kind of an admin-student relation.
Mm-hmm.
Where the admin has a lot of power to dictate whether a student can, let's say, give an exam or not. And from the university I come from, so there the last agitation that, so it had a culture of political student movement, and you know, so the last movement actually that after which student politics there has seen a drastic decline was the attendance system being implemented there. And a lot of students there felt that the way in which they had handled the movement could have been a lot more like the way we have handled it. In terms of maybe even, I'm not saying that tomorrow we are going to be successful in actually resisting the admin completely, but the way in which we have resisted, I think that in itself is something that will resonate across universities.
Okay. This is a slightly disconnected question, but does your family know about your student activism?
Yeah.
And what is their reaction to
it? They are fully supportive.
They are okay.
Yeah.
Do you feel, you spoke about one FIR that has been filed against you, so that's obviously there. But do you feel personally targeted because of your involvement in
Yeah, I do.
By whom? By the university
admin? By the university admin. So my dissertation is still lying around. It's not been even sent to the external after a year.
Okay. And usually when is it sent to the external?
Usually it's sent by, let's say, December. So all my classmates have been awarded their degrees.
Oh, okay.
And I have not had my... So, the first step has also not...
Oh.
Also, I've had a... Today only I received a show cause notice. So,
show cause for what?
For protesting.
Okay.
So, there was a series of... So, between February 9th to February 18th, around 10 days of protests. So, the admin has instituted an inquiry.
Do you think other activists are being targeted in a
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think ultimately that is the thing. So, the political activists are going to be targeted with this admin around. But it's okay.
What about online trolls? Do you think they've singled you out as well?
No, so I'm not very active on social media.
Okay.
I'm on Facebook and I just I just use it as a medium to just communicate what's happening, you know, if there's a protest call.
Right.
I don't engage in a lot of debates or, you know, that kind of a thing. So I have not faced it. But yeah, there are a lot of people who have, on Twitter, I mean, there are a lot of prominent activists on campus who have.
Looking back now, what would you say have been some of the mistakes probably, or some things that maybe you or your organization or the movement at large, like, that could have been done differently? You can also say nothing. I mean, that's fine.
No, I mean, I have...
Like, in terms of mobilization or communication or...
Yeah, I think... I mean, I don't know whether it's something that could have been avoided.
Yeah.
But one of the problems of the movement was that there were moments when it went into a lull. I mean,
right.
Maybe the nature of the movement was such that you were at it for almost 3 months every day. So, but I think in the middle there was a time when, you know, there was a lull. Students were not really sure what direction the movement was going. I think that was one. The second was something that we never... I mean, we still don't have a correct assessment of exactly how much this admin is willing to go to, you know, break our resolve. In terms of even the admin's tactics to implement something as illegal as this, we underestimated the admin. So,
right.
So let's say in the first few months, we were thinking that maybe the admin will come up with some middle ground. You know, something like, let's say, an MPhil PhD, there won't be attendance. BAMA, there will be attendance. So we were also very confident that, you know, the conventional logic would suggest that, you know, you mobilize, you get 2,000 students to come to AdBlock, the admin will be forced to come into a dialogue with you, and then you can extract some kind of a, you know, bargain. But that process has been completely thrown out. That is something that is new for JNU. That,
yeah.
I mean, of course, I'm happy, inspired that, you know, so many students turned up, for, so on and so forth, but... Frankly, in terms of the striking capacity to pull the admin out into a bargain, that is something that we still have not figured out. Because that is something that, I mean, maybe it's not completely in our hands, considering the fact that the government of India is fully backing this admin.
Right.
It's not that it's all our doing. But even then, maybe we should have mobilized some debates within parliament more. Some kind of, so we were not sufficiently, you know, powerful enough to take on the admin in toto.
These issues that are happening in JNU right now, you touched upon it a little bit earlier also, that before this movement also similar issues have been happening, the way this administration is behaving. Do you think similar things are happening in other campuses in the country as well?
Yeah, I think it... More or less, there is an attempt to... So the universities seem to be like the only places where there is a certain resistance to this regime. And I don't think it's all purely ideological. So in a lot of universities, there is no left, there is no organized student politics, and, you know, unlike JNU.
Right.
But even there, you have a certain rebellion against the way in which universities are functioning under the patronage of the present regime. So BHU, the last place you'd expect, there was a huge mobilization of women students who came out against molestation and, you know, the kind of impunity that sexual harassers were being given in the university. AMU just now has had a huge kind of a, you know, there also it has not had a traditional, you know, student politics being in a more organized fashion, but there also things are happening. Maybe the issues are different. Maybe it's not attendance there.
Yeah.
Maybe Delhi University doesn't have the same issue. But I think the nature of the administration is becoming far more authoritarian. Some might call it fascist, you know. But it's that strain is somewhere, I think, is something that is there across university campus.
Do you think there's an attempt on the part of the students to connect these movements across campuses?
I mean, see, there are genuine efforts that are some people are taking.
Right.
Frankly, DSF is a campus-based organization.
Okay.
We have fraternal organizations and, you know, members who are there in primarily in, let's say, Calcutta.
Hmm.
But of course, we are also in touch with other universities and other comrades, other like-minded organizations in other universities and stuff. But yes, that it is a problem that there is, money. 4 years have gone with this regime, but I don't think that kind of a centralized, let's say, national body or some kind of a national forum is still missing. That's something that needs to be worked out.
Has something changed for you at a personal level because of your participation in this movement? Like your understanding, or did you learn something?
Yeah, I think I did. So that's the thing. This movement has been like quite close to me because I've learned so much from it. I mean, because it broke, first, like I said, it broke a lot of the conventional ways in which we were doing politics.
Hmm.
You know, for the first time, I felt that all of us were creatively doing something. You know, because one problem of left politics is that because of its structures, you tend to do things the way they have been set out.
Right.
You know? So it's very difficult to break out of that mold sometimes. And it's not necessarily a bad thing that you work within a mold, but sometimes the nature of issues are such that you have to break out of those molds.
Hmm.
So that has happened. You know? The other thing is that to realize that, you know, that ultimately participation of students is something that is cardinal in any kind of student movement. I mean, something that I am personally of the view that, you know, there is across universities also, there is a certain decline of the sense of universality, you know, the sense that, you know, we are students first. I mean, that might sound cliched, but that was at a loss. I mean, it was being fragmented, and it was fragmented not to the advantage or to further democratization, but to the advantage of people who were frankly ensuring further oppression, further inequalities. So reclaiming that sense of, you know, togetherness, that kind of solidarity was something that was, and how you build that is something that one learned. I mean, even in a more, it wasn't like I've learned everything about it, but in a limited and partial way also, this is something that I think, you know, how do you draw in students into such a movement, you know? How do students take ownership of the movement,
yeah.
You know? What does it mean, you know, to take responsibility of actions, you know? How do you, and I think the biggest thing is that, my sense is that if you have to resist the admin, if you have to resist the right wing, it has to be done in an organized manner.
Hmm.
And but the nature of the organization will always keep changing. Right? The nature of the way we organize ourselves keep changing. That has happened in this movement. So the SFC, you know, is a hitherto dormant body, you know, not, and the best part was that the SFCs are not elected politically through, you know, political elections.
Yeah.
It's a very issue-based, center-wise, depoliticized kind of a election that took place. So a lot of them were not political activists, but they became political activists. They took political responsibility for actions. So that was something that I felt was something very, it broke JNU's traditions of doing politics also.
You said you were in your PhD program. Tell me a little bit about what you're planning for the future.
As a student,
after being a student.
I mean, as of now, I think I, so,
even vaguely, it's fine.
I mean, I want to teach.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, but I want to be associated. I do feel that, you know, being a student of the social sciences, that it's quite, quite insulated from what's happening.
Okay.
In terms of its ability to intervene. So I'd continue to intervene in whatever capacity I can, whether as part of an organization, post PhD, you know, whether even something as meager or small as writing an article. So that is something that I think I'll continue, or would like to continue doing if I get a job.
Okay. Thank you, Pratham. Thanks.